The BS Report is a free-flowing conversation that occasionally touches on mature subjects.
First of all,
this is the BS Report with Bill Simmons.
It might be cool, I don't know. And if it's not, I don't care.
The BS Report with Bill Simmons.
Bill Simmons works for ESPN. He's also named the sports guy, and he writes a comical sports column. He must be a popular dude.
The BS Report.
It's got a real dirty sound, like a rusty steak knife cutting through a well-aged steak.
Now.
Here's Bill Simmons.
All right, round one of the NFL playoffs in the books, and it's time for part two of our NFL Mega Playoff podcast. As always, our friend Cousin Sal is going to join us to guest the line. Sal, how did you do in round one?
Well, I went 3-1.
With your picks. Who did you lose on, Indy?
No, I lost on the last one. I was, like, so close. I thought we could go 4-0, but,
oh. You
know, I was asking too much for Tavares Jackson not to throw a pick six and ruin the perfect record. But
that game really probably should have ended 16-14.
It
felt like that was the destiny for the game, and I don't know what happened on that Westbrook, on that screen. You knew they were going to throw screens to him that whole fourth quarter.
Yeah.
It was weird.
It stinks. And, you know, worse than that, it really, from a gambler's perspective, the Eagles winning really screws things up for the NFC and bettors. It would have been a very easy two-team teaser Saturday, Sunday. If the Giants had played Arizona and the Panthers had played the Vikings, we would have been in good shape.
Yeah, I also thought, I don't know, I feel like Minnesota was pretty close to Philly. And I know Tavares was the great equalizer.
Yeah.
But, you know, they ended up with, like, what, 18 first downs or something?
Yeah.
They got the one big play from Peterson. Mm-hmm. They never made that second big play, whether it was a turnover or a kick return or some sort of long play to Berrien that got an interference. It just never happened.
Yeah. Well.
Frustrating. The Eagle fans are very confident.
They are, right?
Oh, I between the Eagles and the Chargers fans, my email box was just littered with, what is the incentive of people to email me after their team wins to taunt me? Like, I really, like, deep down, like, I care?
Yeah, I know.
Oh, you shoved it in my face.
Put it out there right now. You don't care.
No, I don't care. And nobody emails me after I'm right. I didn't get one email after Arizona covered.
Yeah, I know.
Although Mike Lombardi gave me that pick.
The Eagles, do you think they're happy to play the Giants? I mean, I know the Giants would rather not have played the Eagles, but it does seem like the fans are confident and they're looking forward to this game against the Giants.
They should be confident. They've played them tough twice, and, you know, we see this every year. Every time there's a third game between teams, it's kind of like you don't know what the hell's going to happen.
Yeah.
I had to we cheated a little bit with guess the lines. Normally you guess the lines, and then you read them to me on the air, and I think about them, and I guess them. Last night, right after the games ended, I emailed you my picks because once we get to round two, it's just too hard
to avoid it. Yeah.
Yeah, it really is. And I didn't want to get an email from somebody saying, hey, can you believe the Panthers are favored by this or whatever? So I just emailed
your
picks.
Plus you're thinking about it like 30 seconds before the gun sounds at the end of the game. You know, you're
right.
Thinking about next week. So
let's go AFC first, and we'll start with Tennessee at home against the Baltimore Ravens, and I believe I picked 3.5 for
this
one.
You picked 3.5. I also picked 3.5. It's the Titans favored by 3. Opened up.
Wow.
Crazy.
So Vegas is saying these teams are dead even.
Dead even. After all this, the Titans were the best team in the AFC for most of the year, but the whole year, right?
And then, yeah.
And a measly 3 points to start.
That's amazing.
Yeah.
I really was kidding. I was debating between 3.5 and 4, and then I settled on 3.5 just because, you know, the team that plays so well in round one always gets bumped up a little bit. But
I would love the Titans here. Ed Reed is ridiculous. I mean, he's like a defensive player that should be shadowed like a running back. You know, like the offense should send like a tight end and a wide receiver to take him out of the picture every play. You know.
Yeah. Well. That was also a perfect match. That was the one game I really, really loved was the Ravens against the Dolphins. You can throw on the Ravens. Now the question is, can Kerry Collins throw on the Ravens? I watched that game. I believe the final was 13-10.
Mm-hmm.
Titans were down, and he engineered like an 80-yard drive to basically win the game, and that,
right,
and that was
two drives at the end, yeah.
Yeah, and that was when everybody was like, "Hey, maybe you can win the Super Bowl with Kerry Collins."
It's funny because like normally we say, "Well, they got to take a shot downfield," but I don't think he should throw downfield at all, Kerry Collins. Like that would be a mistake. He's not good at it anyway. This Ed Reed, really, you're lucky if you get away with one interception out of him in a day. So.
You know what's interesting? It turns out that safety is probably the most underrated make-or-break position. Like, you saw what happened to your team in the Ravens game. Like, Ken Hamlin just basically completely murdered the season.
Right.
And then you look at yesterday with the Vikings, Sharper goes out. And, you know, I really thought that was one of the differences in the game. Because the announcers were saying over and over again, "Oh yeah, that guy's out of position. It was the guy who replaced Sharper." And then you look at Ed Reed, and he just wreaked havoc in that Dolphins game.
I can't believe how much ground he covers.
Yeah,
he makes Ray Lewis look lazy.
They seem very, 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 very confident to me.
Yeah.
It's hard to imagine a more confident round two team. And I know we don't want to ever blow up a team that looked good in round one because you can always get to see. But still, you can't be happy if you're a Titans fan.
Well, the only thing I'll say is Flacco can't have as much time to throw as he did yesterday. I mean, that was getting ridiculous after a while. I mean,
right. He
had 7-8 seconds back there. I don't know what happened to the Dolphins' pass rush, but that just can't happen this week, right?
Well, I sent you that email that the reader sent me about what kind of the Dolphins were schedule frauds, basically. And it wasn't just that they played the NFC West and they got to play, you know, Buffalo, but they also got – they got Favre in the last week. They got the Pats in New England right after the Castle injury. They had they played
maybe
the Bills.
By week 21 you'll get it. You'll be able to pronounce.
I can't do it. It's a mental buck. They caught in Buffalo. They got to play in a dome instead of the actual Buffalo Stadium. They got San Fran without Frank Gore. So as it turns out, maybe they just weren't that good.
Yeah, I guess you're right. I guess you're right.
So who do you like in that Ravens-Titans game?
Well, I don't know. This is impossible for me, honestly. Like, I was up at night thinking about this, how lame I am. I'm like, and I love the Titans. You know, I made a bet with myself. I'm like, I want the Titans the first game they play, no matter who they go against. I mean, that's just, they're going to be undervalued, and they certainly are this week, at only -3 at home.
Yeah.
And, you know, these are teams that won 7 or 8 games at home we're dealing with now in the second round, and you know one of them's going to lose. You just don't want to get bit.
Well, I would say that the...
What do you think?
The key thing... Well, I'm not sure yet.
Yeah.
But the key component here is that this is a much different Joe Flacco game than the last game.
Right.
It's one thing to play in Miami against an okay defense that's not really that good.
Mm-hmm.
But now you're talking about a Titans defense that's really good.
Yeah.
And he could... basically do to the Titans what Tavares did to the Vikings yesterday.
Yeah, and like I said, as long as Collins agrees not to throw downfield and do anything stupid and Flacco doesn't get the protection he does, I think the Titans will win the field position battle and they should be all right. But
the Ravens seem a little bandwagon-y too.
Yeah, definitely.
That's never good. All right, let's go to – you know what I was thinking?
What's that?
If you're the first or the second seed – if you're the first seed, you should get to choose who you play in round two.
Wow, that's so funny. I have that written down here.
Oh, you do? Wouldn't that be cool?
Well, I have it with the Giants. There's no way they'd pick the Eagles. That's ridiculous. They'd have Arizona coming to them, right?
Well, maybe in round two it should just go by record.
Yeah, they could do that. I like calling another team out. I like the and then all week, you know, you'll hear Kurt Warner say, "Well, you know, we weren't supposed to play the Giants, but they called us out." And, you know, and
it's like wrestling.
Ends. Yeah.
Yeah. Well, it's, you know, you look at the Giants, they kill themselves trying to get the number one seed.
Yeah.
And now they have to play a much better team in round two. Mm-hmm. And Carolina gets that Arizona team.
And Pittsburgh, I think, is luckier than anyone in the AFC. I mean, who would you not want to play? You wouldn't want to play, Tennessee and you wouldn't want to play Baltimore, you know?
Right. All right. Let's talk about Pittsburgh, San Diego.
All right.
I think I said 5.5.
You said 5.5. I got this one exactly. I said 6.
Oh.
Oh, it opened and is still 6 as of Tuesday morning. So
I was debating between 5.5 and 6 for like 10 minutes.
Yeah.
And I mean, is Parker healthy? What do we know about that?
I think he is going to play and he's healthy. And what are they saying about Big Ben too? So this is stupid. Both these guys should play, right?
I'm going to cover the San Diego game in Friday's column, but.
You're doing the game so you can't make a pick?
No, I'm not talking about a pick. I have this whole thing about...
I like that on Inside the NFL, and it's all a big build-up, and they go to Christians, like, I'm doing the... Oh, you're doing the game. Oh, okay. All right. I didn't know. Yeah.
That is one of the biggest mysteries in sports media.
But they can't pick, yeah.
Well, I mean, what is the guy going to start rooting for it in the booth?
Right, and they have 1,000 opinions during the game anyway, so what's the difference in one more?
Well, plus a lot of these guys, they're openly rooting for one of the two teams anyway. Like,
yeah.
If Aikman's like, I can't pick this, the Cowboys are involved. It's like, come on, Aikman.
Well, but they go like Bill Walton and all the criticism he gives. Like, you think he's not rooting for one team in the NBA? Darren Sproles, 16 rushes, 39 yards, I say, this week.
I thought he was overrated in that game.
Yeah.
The total yardage that they kept talking about, a lot of that was special teams yardage. Yeah,
from the goal line when they're punting and they don't want to get it blocked and everything. But he was pretty good. He finishes runs like no one I've seen in a long time.
No, he was good. But his final yardage got bumped up by the touchdown run on the last play when the Colts had basically, they realized they were done and they had packed it in.
Yeah.
And he fumbled on the 2-yard line. That really could have been the big play of the game.
Sure, yeah. That was bad. I don't know. Are you getting Colts fans emailing you crying about the refs? They all seem to be good calls to me. I don't know. The one holding that we never saw, I don't know. But
every time it seemed like a fishy flag, they'd show the replay, and it was like, oh, yeah, Jeff Saturday did trip him.
Yeah, yeah.
But I thought the one pass interference was terrible.
With Chambers? But it was holding. It wasn't pass interference. Like, he definitely held him before the ball was thrown, didn't he?
It was not pass interference. It was holding. The one where they had the play stopped and Rivers threw that moon ball that had no chance of getting caught, and they said that he held him. Here's the thing. That stuff happens on every play.
Yeah.
You know, if you're going to call that, you watch that Arizona-Atlanta game, and there was 47 holds in that game that they never called in Atlanta. Like, at some point, they make a decision, all right, we're going to let a little bit go every game. So to call that in an overtime on a third down, did you really feel like it affected the play that much?
Well, the Colts probably fumbled right before the end of the first half there, which would have given the Chargers good field position after their long drive. So I think it goes both ways. But look, they lost because Gary Coleman put on a Chargers uniform and racked up 330 all-purpose yards. That's why they lost.
Well, I never like a playoff game to be decided by the coin toss and a shaky call. And that's pretty much what happened.
Yeah.
You know, it was interesting, though. They showed Manning during the OT. First of all, the body language in the Colts was terrible.
Right.
Like, in the overtime, it just looked like all of them thought they were going to lose. They showed Manning sitting on the bench, kind of like he was waiting for his girlfriend on a date or something, and he was mad she wasn't there yet.
Yeah.
So I was talking about it with somebody, and they were saying he looked that way because he knew he was never going to get the ball. He knew the defense could stop him. Interesting theory. I don't know. But I don't know. I didn't like the way the Colts finished the season.
No, that was dumb. And I think, you know what, Tony Dungy should take a step back. And I think I'd retire if I'm him. I mean, he's 7-6 now in the playoffs, and he has Lombardi status somehow. I think, you know what, take that and run.
Well, and then the one Super Bowl season – If the Pats just complete a 3rd-and-3 to Troy Brown, they don't win the Super Bowl.
Yeah, they go 3-0. They're 4-6 other than that Super Bowl season, the playoffs.
Yeah. All right, let's go to Giants. Oh, you never told me who you liked in that game.
Well, I might take the points in this one. Only because I'm having trouble picking an underdog. So.
All right, well, let's go to Giants-Philly. Giants-Philly, I think I said 6.5.
All right, you're going to be bowled over by this one. You said 6.5. I said 7. It's 5. It opened at 5. It's down to 4.
Wow. I don't agree with that.
So here's what happened, basically. The Giants and Titans, who, for the most part, you know, undisputed best two teams in football, are the least favored, but, you know, most likely to get upset out of the two of the four home teams this week. I know I didn't say that right, but you know what I'm talking.
I know what you're saying, even though it wasn't quite English, but that's crazy.
Giants
I don't know what to say.
Four and the Titans are 3, and these two they dominated all year.
If Tavares was even mediocre, the Vikings win that game.
Yeah.
I don't get that.
I don't like it. I hate this line. I hate it that it's easy to take the Giants and
Somebody sent me a great email after I picked the Vikings on Friday. Mm. It was an Eagles fan, and the guy said, "You don't realize this isn't the game the Eagles will lose. It's the next game. This is the game they're going to win to get everybody's hopes up for the next game, and then they're going to stab us in the heart."
Well,
the Philadelphia Eagles.
That's interesting.
Yeah.
I think the Giants do lose one of the next two games. I don't know. I don't know if it's this one. And it's weird because, let me ask you this, out of the eight quarterbacks left, who do you trust the most?
Ooh. That's an interesting one.
I say Eli Manning. It's not even close, I don't
think. I thought Phil Rivers was really good in that game on Saturday because the Colts were in his face the whole game, and he never really killed them.
He had a gutty 3rd and 13. He ran for 12 yards, and then they went up front 4th and made it. But
yeah, he made it. You know, he's a football player. He made a lot of football player plays.
Yes, good football plays out there.
Because you look at his team, and it's like his receivers aren't that good. Gates is obviously injured. He had Sproles, his third down back, playing every snap. And
well, then you should like them to win, then, if he's the best quarterback alive.
No, I would put it between him and Eli.
Yeah.
I don't trust either of the guys in that Tennessee-Baltimore game.
Right. And, you know, Warner's going to have trouble against the Panthers, and DeLome. Yeah. I don't know. I hate both these teams. I hate them both. I'm going to take the Giants to win for sure, but I don't know. I don't know if they cover. You know, traditionally, this is a screwy game. That work with me here. That first Sunday, that second Sunday of playoff football.
Oh, it's weird.
Last few years, the Steelers beat the Colts in Indy. The Chargers beat the Colts. Maybe it's just the Colts, but the Chargers beat the Colts. Is that last year? Yeah.
No, last year wasn't the last game Giants-Packers Sunday?
No, not the last game. This is the first game Sunday.
Oh, the first game.
First game Sunday. Traditionally screwy. The Steelers beating the Colts in Indy and the Chargers beating the Colts. And I think, like, there was an overtime game, I think Seattle and the Bears. I don't know.
I'm going to research this.
Yeah.
Because we said the same thing about round one, the Saturday night game, for some reason, weird stuff always happens.
Right.
And we saw it again this year. And now I'm starting to think I might have to add that to my playoff manifesto.
Yeah.
Just beware of the round one Saturday night game. It just, that was the Tuck rule, was that game?
Yep, definitely.
The whatever the game was where I think it was San Diego, it was Schottenheimer giving 6 to the Jets and the Jets beat him.
Oh, yeah. That was a good one.
There's a bunch of them.
Atlanta won in Lambeau. That was like the first team. First time a team won. We watched that together. The first.
Yeah,
team.
We did.
Yeah.
That was like one of the first playoff games we ever watched together.
Yep. By the way, we did well. We had a very romantic week in the cabin.
The families got together. Your son and my daughter are in love. And the best part was they went out, and you and I we got the lines and we talked about the January 1st, January 2nd games and the round one games for probably 18 hours.
It was nice. And we bet Georgia and USC. We had a good time. And then we lost it all on the Colts.
And then the Colts. The Colts murdered me.
Even though I picked the Chargers.
The Colts would have sent me to Tahiti if they won. Let's hit the last game. We've got 5 minutes left.
Cardinals at Panthers.
I said 10.5.
You got it closer. Let me figure out what you said 10.5. You definitely got it closer. I said 7. And it's 10.
So I was within a half point of 3 games, and I was a point and a half off in the Giants game.
Right. Yeah, you did good. You're getting good at this.
Thank you.
Continue to move backward for some reason.
Well, the readers now are clamoring to have you replaced. They say you're not efficient enough with your line guessing.
Well, I'm going to look into this whole thing. I still believe you may be cheating.
I think you're like Brad Childress. You're on the hot seat.
I wonder if I can get Roger Goodell to look into this, honestly.
What do we think of that?
Don't they get smoked, the Panthers, the Cardinals?
Well, let's talk about the time of that game. Is it Saturday or Sunday?
It's Saturday night.
Saturday night, so you figure, what would be the 3-team tease that all the dumb gamblers will do?
Well, they should probably put the Panthers on it. I don't know what that Titans rate. Maybe the Ravens plus 13 and
the Eagles plus 14?
Yeah, maybe something like that.
Well, you have a friend who accepts bets from people, and he told you before that Indy game that the action was coming in on Indy so furiously that he could just not even fathom it.
That was it. I mean, it was they were betting it like the Colts had won already. And,
right.
And still, people pounded that game, and it still never hit three. It was like you could still get them by 2.5 if you won by a field goal. They went, that's why it was so fishy to me.
Well, that's what makes me wonder. Like, you know, there's one playoff game like that every year where just everybody has the same team. I didn't realize it was going to be the Indy game when I made my picks. I actually thought it was going to be the Philly game. But
right.
It makes you wonder, with all those weird calls, they don't win the coin toss. Like, can the NBA, can the NFL rig a coin toss?
You're going into very dangerous territory here, Bill Simmons.
Well, what if
I will give you a little latitude, but just a little.
What if the refs knew how to flip the coin?
What if
Vegas, they taught the refs how to flip the coin?
I don't know how it is. I don't know why it is that when everyone bets one team, it more likely than not doesn't come in. But yeah, for sure, there are screwy games.
Explain it because. Because most of the people who gamble are kind of pathetic, like us, and they have bad luck. And so if a bunch of people with bad luck all agree that the same thing is going to happen and need the same thing to happen, they swing the luck of the game.
That is interesting. I believe in streaks and everything else, but Peyton Manning's Colts are better than the 4-8 Chargers. The bottom line, right? Why should that be close?
Well, Your bat phone's ringing.
I got Lombardi calling me. Yeah.
Hey, how do you explain the fact that if we're watching football at Jimmy's house and a bunch of us have the same game that we've wagered on, if Corolla gets in on the bet, we know we're going to lose. I mean, it's like guaranteed 100% of the time he kills the bet for everybody.
No, you're right. You're right. I can't explain it. I can't.
So who do you like in that game?
I think this has 38-10 written all over it. I think. You know, Wisenhunt got the Gatorade splash last week, and you might as well be pouring out headlines for the following Monday saying Cardinals get slaughtered. So, I don't know. I think the Panthers are going to the Super Bowl.
Well, we talked about it when we were hanging out last week. Our best case scenario was Arizona winning that game and then being able to bet against them in round two because they're just complete frauds.
Yeah.
So you like basically every favorite, and you have not talked yourself into an underdog yet.
Well, here's the deal. You know how this goes. One underdog is for sure winning outright, right? Especially since these are all rematched games.
Right.
Even twice over sometimes. So you could probably do all right taking all the underdogs on the money line. I mean, you if you go 1-3, you know, you probably do all right. And, more, you know, it's probably going to be 2-2, right?
Mm. Well, who's the most obvious game?
The most obvious to win?
No, the most obvious pick that general America is going to back and will end up screwing everybody. I think it's Baltimore.
You do, huh?
Yeah.
I'd say Baltimore or the Giants. That Giants line is too low. And maybe people fall in love with the Chargers more than they should.
That would be interesting.
You know, that's six.
All right, your show's coming back this week, right?
Yeah, we're back. We have Ron Howard on and a few other good guests, yeah.
Jimmy Kimmel Live. Who knew we'd make it to 2009? I still say we, even though I'm not in the show. Hey, one last question.
Yeah.
Rick Rosner is on a Domino's ad.
Oh, yeah. Some of your readers want to talk about Rick. It's insane to me. This is a guy, you can't even explain him in a minute, so I don't even know how we're going to do this.
All right. Well, you know what? We're going to hold that thought till next week, but look for Rick Rosner in these Domino's ads. The single strangest person I've ever met in my life.
Yeah.
And I love him.
Google Rick Rosner, and they had a documentary on him and everything, and fascinated.
His documentary is on YouTube, split into 7 parts. I watched it this weekend in its entirety for the first time, and it is just even more magnificent than you could ever imagine.
Yeah, absolutely. Put it on during the second half of that Cardinals-Panthers game after the blowout.
All right. We'll talk to you next week, Cousin
Sal.
Thank you.
I'll talk to you.
All right. Bye. All right. Now we're going to go to our cleanup hitter, batting second today. Had to move him up in the lineup because of some scheduling conflicts. The man who saved me from picking Atlanta in round one from the NationalFootballPost.com, Mr. Mike Lombardi. What's happening?
I couldn't save you from yourself. All week you were so anxious to bet against DeVaris Jackson, and you went and violated your own creed. That was the most disappointing thing. You were giddy, as your words, going down the stretch thinking that DeVaris was going to be in the playoffs. And then you went ahead and went against them. I just disappointed.
You know what happened? I made the mistake of picking the 4 games collectively, and I needed a second home team. and I was convinced Indy was going to beat San Diego. So once Indy lost to San Diego, I knew I was screwed with Tavares. I just knew it.
Yeah. That's a good way of looking at it. You're right, though. You figured it was going to be 50-50. You just didn't know where the other one was coming from. And there was no way Baltimore was going to lose to Miami. Miami just didn't have enough gas in the tank. Yeah.
The safe move would have been to just pick Indy and Philly and try to split. But I want to go 11-0. I can't play it safe, so I had to go for the home run ball. And, you know, the funny thing is Minnesota was in that game and probably could have covered if they don't give up that screen pass.
Well, you know, I mean, there's a lot of things in that game. I mean, just hypothetically, just walk that. Say Bill Belichick coached the Minnesota Vikings. What do you think their record would be?
They'd be like 14-2. It's just Childress is just a step late. He just is. Like, you look at, they're down. Philly scores in that screen pass. It's 23-14. And they send Maurice Hicks back, who's just terrible as a kick returner. And he runs it into the 18 like he always does. And I emailed my friend Jeff, who's a diehard Viking fan, man, it's why didn't they have Peterson return that kickoff? You know, it's at that point you're desperate. You want to put Peterson back there. He might break one. So then the Eagles get a field goal. It's 26-14 with 2 minutes left. Suddenly Peterson's back there for the kickoff. Like, it's like he's 5 minutes late with every decision. It's unbelievable.
Thank God he's not a doctor. Thank God he's not a doctor.
Well, what about his clock management in the last minute of the first half? So Philly has one timeout. They run it. Fans boo. Second down on their own 10. Terrible pass. Bounced into the ground. Then they run it again. Philly calls timeout. Now Philly has the ball back at midfield with 30 seconds left.
Which people don't realize. So we understand this. And Viking fans that don't know, they're the worst punt coverage team maybe in the history of football. Hmm. Every time they punt, it was going to be a play for Philly. To a guy. So now you're playing into your weakness.
Right.
I mean, if you know you can't punt and you know you can't cover punts, just like overnight you're not going to just cover. I mean, I fully expected that punt return to go to the 25. I really thought it was going to be an easy field goal at that point, but they got a break there. But, you know, I mean, just the Vikings problems that always come up during the season showed up completely in that game. You know,
Yeah, they really did.
You know, the more third downs you put Tavares Jackson in, the worse it was going to be. And they had 18 of them yesterday.
And the other problem, you know, Sharper going out really hurt.
Because they picked on that safety.
Yeah.
Yeah. Like, Leslie Frazier is going to get one of these three jobs that are open because of the way they play defense.
Yeah, I still stand by the pick. You know, I stand by the going with Indy. And if I had to do it over again, trying to go for 4-0, I'd do it. I still feel like if Minnesota had ever gotten the lead in that game, I think Philly plays completely different. You know?
One thing I will say, the Indy pick was, I picked Indy too. I thought that was the one I missed on, but I think if we get the ball, Indy gets the ball in overtime, they win. And San Diego got it in overtime and they won. So, you know, that was one of those, and that was the one that I was wrestling with all week. I just never had a clear cut vision in my head about the Indy because both teams were playing better. What shocked me about that game, Bill, was as bad as the Chargers' offensive line played in the game, they still won the game.
Well, do you feel like those teams play 10 times? How many does Indy win?
Six? Yeah, I think if they play in Indianapolis, it's 8-2. If they play in San Diego, 6-4.
I agree. And man, you just look at that game, and it basically came down to the coin toss and that one dubious interference call that kept that drive alive on that pass that had no chance, that moon pass by Rivers. Yeah. Were you happy with that call?
You know, I thought it was the right call. I really do. I think he did hold them. I will say this. I think the key to the game was that the decision they made on the Chargers sideline to not play LT.
Yeah.
Because I think the longer they went with that LT illusion, because the first play of the game, and I wrote this morning, the first play of the game would have been a touchdown if Sproles would have run it. It was as well blocked as any play is going to be blocked. It was perfectly designed, and LT got 12 yards. He just had no burst. It's not his fault. It's nothing other than his injury. And I think this week, playing the Steelers, playing a fast team, you need quickness, you need explosion. You don't need a kind of a broken down guy.
You know who he looked like on that run? He looked like LL Cool J in any given Sunday. And that was a bad sign for their playoff hopes. And they did the right thing. They switched him out. And is Tomlinson on the Raiders next year? What team does he go to?
You know, I don't
think
so. I think what helped LT the most this year was those couple games where he looked like he was back, which he did. And then the last game that he pulled his groin, I think everybody in San Diego is going to say he was back at the end of the year and he got hurt again. We just got to make sure we protect ourselves. And the question comes out now, is having Sproles a good enough of a protection, or do they need to get somebody else? Sproles is a dimension of that offense. It sticks it into another gear. It's the one guy in Pittsburgh they're worried about.
I still feel like he was a little overrated in that game. He fought that fumble on the 2-yard line almost lost him the game.
It really did. But you see, the thing people don't realize about Darren Sproles is the number one leading rusher in high school in the state of Kansas. This kid's a runner. I mean, this isn't just like, he's not Reggie Bush. He's a runner who's little. Reggie Bush is a bigger man, but runs smaller. You know, Reggie Bush is 205, but he runs like he's 180.
But we can both agree the punter was the MVP not only of that game, but maybe in the history of punting, the greatest game that's ever happened.
Yeah, I don't know if he had a wedge in his pocket. I don't know how he did it, but that was incredible. And every time he backed them up, they got better field position and be able to convert some points.
He kind of reached like a Michael Jordan level with the last punt. When he made it stop on the 1-yard line and spin back, and then he's running out. It reminded me of when Jordan hit the 6 3-pointers against Portland. He's just like, oh, my God, I'm in the zone. What can I say? I've never seen a punter sway a game like that. I didn't even know if it was possible.
Yeah, it was incredible. And, I mean, you know, who could have thought it? And, you know, really, ESPN should have showed a bunch of highlights of it just because that was probably the plays of the game. But who wants to watch a punter?
Well, what did he have, 5 inside the 10?
Yeah.
And they only ran 6 return yards, I think. That was crazy. Mm-hmm. Let's talk about the round 2 games because we don't have you for that long. You saved me last week with Arizona. It was really one of the great moments in podcasting history. It really was.
Well, you know, as much as the Arizona Cardinals were trying to take it away from you with their defensive calls at the end of the game, which I still don't understand. I went berserk in my house.
Yeah.
You know, you got to give them credit for making that 3rd and 10 call or 3rd and 14 call that got the first down, because I really think if Atlanta got the ball back, they might have won.
Well, let's talk about Arizona going into Carolina, 10-point underdogs this week. What do you think?
You know, I don't like Arizona because Arizona's the kind of team they have to guess right. And I think when you really break down that game last week, the home crowd won the game for Arizona. The crowd noise neutralized the snap count. It neutralized Matt Ryan from being able, their offensive line from getting off the ball. They couldn't hear. And all those advantages that they had to shut down the Falcons, they're not going to have to shut down the Panthers. And I think what people misconstrue about the Panthers are they are a huge big play team. They're not a running team. They're not like the Minnesota Vikings under Brad Childress who want to run the ball. They are a big play running team. And so when you have a big play running team and you've got a guessing style of defense, I think, really, this is the perfect team for Carolina to warm up with for the conference championship game. They're not really good enough. They can't stop the run. They can't stop the pass. And they give up big plays. And I just don't see it. I don't see a way to where the Cardinals can win this game. Edgerrin James being back, it's a nice story and all that. But at the end of the day, if they don't have Bolden and they only have one receiver, it's not going to be enough. And Warner's going to make mistakes.
I know Bolden had a big play in round one, but you know, I've watched him pretty carefully. I don't think he's the same since he got hit. He's dropping passes over the middle at least once or twice a game, and he never used to do that. I just don't think psychologically he's back. And if he's not going to give them a monster game in Carolina, because we know Fitzgerald will show up. He's probably the best receiver in the league. But I think they need both of them, and I'm not sure Bolden's quite there yet.
I don't think so either. And I think the pressure is going to bother. I think Peppers is going to have an impact on the game. And I think that you saw the Cardinals' offensive line play decent at home, but when they go on the road, now I know it was a close game when they played back in September, but when they go on the road, I think it's a different team, and I just don't see them being able to control Carolina if they've got the big defensive tackles inside. I can't say his name, comma, whatever it is. So I don't see them being able to handle that, and I think that's really where the game is won. I just think the Panthers are just too explosive.
Are you sold on Warner against a big pass rush on the road, semi-cold weather?
Not at all. Not at all. I wasn't sold on Warner in that game. I kept wanting him to make more plays, and they had so many opportunities to put the game away, especially in the first half, that they just didn't seem like they were flowing offensively. And I know that Edgerrin gave them some life, but to me, they should have put that game away, and it shouldn't have come down to that third down call that they made a great call on. but they weren't really precise. And I think when you force Kurt Warner to reload and move in the pocket, it's not as pretty as it once was.
In your opinion, how much does it matter when a team plays a really good game during the regular season against a team that they're then going against in the playoffs where they're underdogs? Because we're seeing it twice this we're seeing it with actually three times because – well, actually, I guess all four of these games, because San Diego played Pittsburgh well, too.
Right.
You have four out of the four round two games, you have four instances where the teams know that they can hang with the other team. Does that matter, or do we wipe it out for the playoffs?
I think you kind of wipe it out. I mean, I'm a guy that lost three times to Pittsburgh, you know, in Cleveland in 1994. We just never could beat them. I think it shows that there's a matchup problem and there's a flaw in the game. And you know, Arizona really doesn't match up well to Carolina, and I think that's a problem. Now, I think going to San Diego and Pittsburgh, there was some plays in that game that San Diego thought, boy, if we'd have done this or that, we might have had a chance to win.
Well, let's talk about that. Who do you like in that one?
You know, I like Pittsburgh, and I'm cautious about this one because I don't think Pittsburgh's really that talented on offense, and I think that helps San Diego because San Diego just played Peyton Manning, and they did a great job. But they still gave up 300 yards passing. And I think that at the end of the day, Roethlisberger will probably make the one or two plays to win the game for Pittsburgh. But I think it'll be an ugly, ugly defensive struggle that the Steelers will probably win because of that. But I think this is a game that the Chargers can hang around in.
Well, how different is the Pittsburgh offense than the Indy offense? Because the thing that shocked me about Indy, I mean, we knew the run yard status. The run yardage was down in the regular season for them, but I always assumed it was because Adai had been banged up and he'd missed basically half the season. But then in round one, I mean, they could have run the ball for 2 yards.
Indy can't run the ball. They're not physical up front, and neither is Pittsburgh.
Does the same thing happen in this game? Like does Pittsburgh struggle offensively just like the Colts did?
I think they do. The difference is I think Pittsburgh doesn't have the receiver, the Reggie Wayne or the Gonzalez. I mean, Marvin Harrison obviously has seen his better days. They don't have those receivers. Hines Ward is a good player. They're going to need a big game out of Santonio Holmes. They're going to need a big game out of Nate Washington to do it. Now, they can do it, and that's why I think at the end of the day in the fourth quarter, Pittsburgh finds a way to win the game. But I do think that it's a tough struggle for Pittsburgh to move the ball on anybody because they're not that good on offense.
Well, and you know, that you just used the same logic basically that we used to pick the Colts last week. Oh yeah, they'll find a way to win in the fourth quarter. They didn't. So that makes me think I can't believe this, but I feel like I'm leaning towards San Diego.
Yeah, I think it's going to take a little bit more of the week to really figure it out. Obviously, the one thing that's going to happen is LT's not – I mean, they're not going to even kid themselves this time.
Right.
They're going to not dress him. I mean, it was – you know, they knew – you could tell in pregame. I mean, I think even Andrea Kramer knew he wasn't healthy. So I think that – you know, I think this week they're going to kid themselves. But, you know, they've had a matchup with them. I think it's going to come down to Phillip Rivers making plays. But here's what steers me to Pittsburgh.
Okay.
The Chargers offensive line could not handle the Colts.
And their speed on the front line.
They were playing at home.
Right.
Now they got to go on the road, that same offensive line, and they've got to handle Harrison and Woodley and all those guys. And I think that's the difference in the game. I think at the end of the day, the Chargers offensive line will let them down.
So you're saying the speed of the Pittsburgh front seven is going to control this game?
Yep, exactly.
Well, I'm going to throw this at you. Is this the biggest punting mismatch in the history of football? Who is worse than the Pittsburgh punter? And that guy's a train wreck, and I've watched him all season thinking, that guy's going to kill them in the playoffs. He's going to kill them in the playoffs. And then you have the San Diego punter, who is worth like 25 yards of field position every time. Maybe that swings at 10 points.
He's going to be key in the game. He really is. Because the one thing Pittsburgh can do, even if they move the ball a little bit, if they have bad field position, they won't move it into scoring position. The Minnesota punters could be as bad as any punter, too.
Right. Yeah, he was terrible, and I love the fact that DeSean Jackson actually trash-talked Brad Childress. I can't believe you're kicking to me. and nobody else could believe it either, DeSean.
No player on the Minnesota side went to defend the coach. Did you notice that?
No. They looked very ready for Bill Cowher. Let's talk about Baltimore going into Tennessee getting 3 points.
Well, you know, this is a game that the last time they played, you know, Tennessee really struggles to move the ball against against a team like Baltimore that can physically match up to the running game, which they clearly can do.
Yeah.
And I think the one area that Baltimore is weak is at their corners. If you can protect long enough, and the advantage that Tennessee has here is they know how to handle Baltimore. This is not a strange place for them to deal with their blitzes or the speed of the game. I think partly when you play Baltimore, you got to know the speed of the game and you got to handle it. But I think this is one of those 12-10 games, and I think that Tennessee at the end of the day can win the game. I mean, look, Baltimore really didn't do very much until the very bitter end of the game to win the game against Miami. Miami physically was handling them for a while with their defense, and I think Tennessee will too. But this game is going to come down to, you know, can Tennessee physically match up against Baltimore's defense? And my answer is I think they can, and I think they win a close game.
Would you say that Tennessee is a better version of the Miami offense? That basically they don't have a big play threat, neither did Miami. They have the two running backs, but their running backs are better than the Miami running backs. They have the QB who allegedly doesn't make turnovers and is the good veteran, but Collins is probably better than Pennington. So if that's the case, doesn't that mean Baltimore would swallow up the Tennessee offense same way?
I think the difference is the one thing Kerry Collins can do better than people give him credit for is he throws the deep ball as well as anybody. And I think that's what you have to do to beat Baltimore. You have to throw the deep ball. You have to attack them. You got to find a way to make big plays. And I think that's what Tennessee can do, whether it's double moves, whether it's with their tight ends, whether it's some kind of formula. And I think that Tennessee understands the good value of punting. They know that a punt to give it to Baltimore's offense is going to help them. But hey, Baltimore's got that playoff feel to them. They understand it, and they're a veteran team, and this will be a great, great game. This will be the game of the weekend.
Who is catching that deep ball in Tennessee that you think? Because I agree, you beat Baltimore by throwing deep on them, but I don't know who's going to make that play on Tennessee.
You know, they don't really have anybody. It just, when it happens, you say, geez, I didn't even know they had him on the team.
Carl Pickens, where'd he come from?
You just say, God damn, there's Bobby. You know, I didn't even know he was there. Where's he been for 6 weeks? You know, that's the way Tennessee is.
Good God, that's Alvin Harper. all right, so you're kind of leaning a little bit toward Tennessee.
Yeah, no doubt.
Well, something's in your favor. It looks like Baltimore is going to be the bandwagon pick this week. I'm just feeling it.
Yeah, I think so too. I think everybody thinks, and I think that Jeff Fisher has a great ability to coach at these games. I really do, and I think coaching plays a big part in these games. He knows how to handle his team, and I love John Harbaugh. I think John Harbaugh is one of the great coaches in the league because he's been able to take a Baltimore team that was talked about all about their defense and has swung it into being a team. And what's interesting about Baltimore is Ray Lewis is a free agent at the end of the year, and you don't hear one word about him crying about a new contract.
That's a good one. I didn't even think of that. Well, you and I are co-presidents of the Jeff Fisher Mutual Admiration Society.
Yeah.
Or I guess it would be the Admiration Society because he doesn't mutually admire us. But you know,
he knows how to get his team ready, and I think that this, you know, he's seen this game before. I mean, he's played Baltimore before. He knows how it's going to go. He knows what to expect. And you know, Baltimore is a little bit, you know, the one area you can get an advantage on Baltimore is in the kicking game. They're not a great kicking game team, even though their head coach is a special teams. And Tennessee might be able to find a way to make a play or two there. But the kicking game and field position is going to be a great determiner here.
What about Flacco going against a great defense versus a pretty good one on the road?
I think that's what made me sway this way. And for this reason, I think when you watch the game closely yesterday, when Miami put pressure on Flacco and got up the middle on him, which is what they'll do in Tennessee, Flacco became a little bit inaccurate and a little bit all over the place, and he wasn't quite as good. And I think Tennessee is going to require them to have to drive the ball down the field in a meticulous fashion, and I'm not sure a rookie quarterback in this environment can handle it.
Me neither. Let's go to the last game. The Philadelphia Eagles, who really should have been dead in Week 17 and got a ton of help, and now are America's favorite underdog, only getting 4 in Giant Stadium.
They're like Vito Corleone. They escaped. They should have been killed, and they've come to America, and they've got a new life. It's amazing. They really are amazing. I mean, you know, and I kept watching that game yesterday, and I don't mean to pick on Brad Childress, but, you know, Philly did not look like the more talented team. They just looked like the better team.
Yep.
You know, and Westbrook still doesn't look like Brian Westbrook, but McNabb made a couple plays, and you just think, gosh, if he can do that. You know, the Giants being rested, I think, certainly is going to help them. But the Giants have a couple of problems that people don't realize. For a Tom Coughlin team, they're one of the most penalized teams in the National Football League.
Yeah.
And that really hurts them. And it hurts them offensively because when you're a running-based team like they are and you get a false start, it's first and 15, it's hard to keep calling runs. And then you add the fact that they're also one of the worst teams in the league in catching the football. They're 31st in the league in drop passes. So they don't catch the ball very well. So, you know, Eli gets back there, and sometimes he throws those helicopter balls that don't get caught. And I think that becomes a problem. And, you know, I just think it's tough to beat a team twice on their home field.
Yeah.
And God knows what the weather's going to be like in there. So I think the more physical, more dominant team is the Giants, and that would be the pick. And I think the end comes near. I mean, you said it last week to me about Philadelphia and being on the road. And
What did I say? I don't remember. I have no long-term memory.
You were saying that how they are not a great road team, and you wrote about it in your column.
Yeah.
You know, and it made me kind of think twice. Could they, you know, it's that old Dale Brown, you know, Bobby Knight to Dale Brown. You know, geez, you got all those good players. But then when I saw Dale Brown on the other side, I knew we'd be okay. You know.
Yeah. Yeah.
So I think that's that. But I think this game here. I think the Giants will be ready to come out. I think they'll be really ready, and they'll be more precise, and they'll have more concentration. And if the weather doesn't impact them, I think they can win it.
I would be leaning toward the Giants here. The only thing that scares me is I really like the way McNabb played yesterday. I liked everything about it. I thought he made some really, really nice passes. I thought he was in control. I liked the way he led the team. Like, I actually felt like he was a leader. And I can't tell how good he is. I don't know what his ceiling is. Could he go into this Giants game and just pick them apart and run around and do stuff? I don't know.
You know, he could, and I'll tell you, thank God he can run around and move, because Runyon's playing on one knee. He could barely move and get out of his way. And all the play, even the screen pass that Westbrook made was a sensational play, and it took a lot for McNabb just to get him the ball in the right timing and the right rhythm. I thought it was a great – I mean, McNabb's – and I've said this to you before. He's like Allen Iverson. You cannot judge him by his completion percentage. You got to judge him by the plays he makes to win the game. And I think that's the way he is. And I think he does enough. It just – to me, the Eagles' offensive line struggled yesterday on the road. This is going to be another game where the Giants' defensive line – remember the last time they played, the tackles were hurt. The defensive line was kind of beat up. I think the Giants will be ready. Brandon Jacobs will be healthier.
Well, they also had the Plaxico Burress thing. It just happened. Right. That was one of the all-time in-season distractions that we've seen.
Right. Hmm. And I think they'll use this as motivation for them. I think motivation is a great tool, you know, when they've beaten you and then they talked about it. It's like, look, you know, you saw it on YouTube. I mean, when the Jets beat the Patriots up there, somebody caught the Jets shaking hands. They thought they just won the Super Bowl. You don't think that was motivation for the rest of the season for the Patriots?
Well, what about Arizona giving their coach the Gatorade bath after winning a home game in round one?
I thought it was clearly a team that didn't expect to win. You know,
yeah,
you don't do that. I mean, that's not what you do in the playoff game. There's a bigger goal here, but obviously, I think they built their team up to win that game, and they did.
Well, I might have to add that to the playoff manifesto. If a team gives their coach a Gatorade bath in round one, do not pick them for round two.
They don't even expect to be there.
Yeah. They're basically saying, we can't believe we won a playoff game. This is great.
Yes,
wow.
Exactly.
All right, last thing. You were on TV last week.
Yeah.
You were on Showtime Inside the NFL. They gave you, like, your own segment and everything. And then you broke the Matt Cassel franchise tag story.
Yeah.
This could be your breakout year, Mike Lombardi, 2009.
Yeah. Yeah, I'm on a roll. But I mean, you know, you read the Post every day. I've been writing about the Post, and Inside the NFL on Showtime is, you know, really, as you know, it's a great show. When you got Chris Collinsworth and you got Phil Sims and you got Warren, I mean, it's really a great forum, and those guys are tremendous, and they like football. So that for me is an easy show because I just get to talk about football.
But they hate each other, though, Collinsworth and Sims. That's the word. That. Everybody talks about it. It's the biggest feud. It's like they're like Tupac and Biggie.
It's
so much bad blood. How do they even keep those guys in front of the camera together without them coming to blows?
It's producer. He does a great job. But I think it's a great show. And hopefully, you know, more people watch Showtime because it's it's really good. And I think that that's the one place where, unlike a lot of the pregame shows, you can really talk about a lot of football.
I think what would help is, you know, I think you really have to take advantage of Showtime. Maybe nudity in the last 5 minutes. Not with the male co-host, but maybe have some female nudity. I don't know. Maybe somebody comes in naked with, like, covered in whipped cream and makes pics. Or actually, James Brown would have a heart attack if that happened.
You talk about, I've been fortunate to be around two of the nicest people in the world. Jim Nance is nicer in person than even appears on television, and James Brown's the same way.
James Brown could probably run for president and win. It seems like everybody who interacts with him, their life is altered after they meet him.
He's a wonderful man, and even if he had to bomb your country, he would say how nice he was to you when he bombed you.
All right, so Mike Lombardi, in 2009, you break the castle story. You have one of the greatest moments in podcasting history, talking me out of Atlanta. And then what was the third thing?
Well, I'm going to be back on Showtime
inside
this
the NFL.
I'm going to be back on Showtime on Inside the NFL this week, too.
So you're becoming a TV star. This is great. The Browns fans are coming very close to forgiving you for the Craig Powell pick.
Yes. I haven't forgotten myself for the Craig Powell pick. Let's be real honest here. You know?
I got an email from Cleveland saying, listen, I'm fine with Lombardi being on, but you have to ask him about the Craig Powell pick. You have to ask him.
You know, I will tell you this. This is how bad that day was for us. We were going to either pick Craig Powell or Curtis Martin.
Okay?
Yeah. Loved Curtis Martin. We were going to pick him, and we decided to go with the defensive player. We passed on Martin, thought we could get him in the third, and Parcells beat him to us. But, look, that night, you could tell them all, it's my fault. I'll take responsibility. I burnt every stitch of clothes on my body that night. That was a bad day for me.
Nice. You know, you and Matt Millen taking responsibility in the same week. I like it. Matt Millen.
don't do that to me.
No, I was kidding. What did you think of Matt Millen being on NBC?
You know, I thought, you know, Matt, that's what Matt had always done. So I'm surprised it took all this time for Matt to come back to television. I really thought he would be back on Fox sooner than this. I mean, Matt enjoys television and he's good at it. So I was surprised that he didn't do more of it.
I watched it and I thought, you know what, this guy's great on TV. And unfortunately, this is what he should have been doing the last 8 years. Instead of running an NFL team. I felt bad for the Lions fans, though. I mean, they're just trying to wash the 0-16 stink off them.
Yeah.
And then they turn on the TV. I get to watch the playoffs, and then boom.
Yeah. At least for them, they can move forward.
I hope so. All right, Mike Lombardi. This 2009 could be the year of Lombardi. I'm calling it right now.
All because of you. It'll be all because of you.
Oh, stop it. We'll talk to you next week for round three. Good luck with the picks.
All right, Bill. Thanks.
All right, thanks.
Bye-bye.
All right, batting in the three-hole this week, the Manny Ramirez spot, our friend Aaron Schatz from footballoutsiders.com, who really invested himself with Philly to the point that he almost felt like his professional credibility was on the line if they didn't win in round one, and they did. Have you ever been more excited for a non-Patriots win?
I'm actually not sure if I have. No, I mean, listen, it's good to see them living up to our numbers, and certainly if they should lose to the Giants, that's not, you know, doesn't make our numbers look bad because the Giants and Eagles are, you know, both up there among the top couple of teams in the league this year, but they were definitely better than Minnesota. So it's nice to see that. It's also nice to see Baltimore win because if you remember from the preseason, I think we were really the only people out there talking about Baltimore as a playoff team. And they didn't win the division like we expected, but that had nothing to do with our Baltimore prediction. That was our Pittsburgh prediction that was wrong. So it's nice to see Baltimore and Philly both doing well.
So if they both win in round two, then you can do the Denny Green, they were who we thought we were.
They were who we thought they were. Honestly, if they lose in the second round, I could still do the Denny Green because Tennessee's also a really good team. All the teams at the top of the league, based on our ratings, are really packed closely together this year. And, you know, I don't think you need stat ratings to be able to tell that that's the case. I don't think there's a clear favorite in the Baltimore-Tennessee game. There's not really a clear favorite in the Giants-Philadelphia game.
Right. Were you surprised numbers-wise by anything that happened in round one other than Mike Seifers having the greatest game in the history of punting?
Actually, I wasn't surprised by Mike Seifers having the greatest game in the history of punting. I mean, he's been at the top of our punting numbers, him and Shane Leckler, the two of them, for a couple of years now. and Leckler's more of a distance guy, and Cyphers is more of a, you know, coffin corner guy.
Yeah.
And apparently Bennett, the guy who used to punt for San Diego, was an Australian rules football player before that, and he's taught Cyphers ways to hold and drop the ball differently to create different spin when it hits the ground, and that's part of how he's able to get, you know, the balls pinned inside the 10 and the 20 all the time. He's a great player.
Dave, you ever ranked, like, the greatest career punters of all time, try to figure out, like, where he stands?
No, it's hard to get the old numbers on punting. That's probably, I mean, I have to go back and check, but probably the best individual punting performance of the playoffs in our database, at least going back to 95.
Yeah,
it's not the best team punting, but that's because the best team punting would be a team that, like, you know, forced a couple fumbles on punt returns or something.
Yeah, because he had, I think, 5 inside the 10.
It was unbelievable. The guy's really good.
When we were growing up, Ray Guy was the guy. No pun intended.
He's still the guy.
Yeah.
You know, that's why every year you have the debate. He's sort of taken on the Art Monk role as the biggest debate in the Hall of Fame right now.
Mm.
I always used to tell people that the Baseball Hall of Fame inspired such, you know, emotional debates, and the only a football player really inspired similar emotion was Art Monk. And now he's in, and I think Ray Guy is starting to get to that point because it becomes a whole, look, if it's a position on the field, shouldn't the best guy who's ever played that position be in the Hall of Fame kind of argument?
I not only do I wholeheartedly agree, but I never understood the Art Monk thing. I feel like when I'm watching football games at the time, I should be thinking to myself, I'm watching Hall of Famer right now. And I never felt that way with Art Monk, but Ray Guy was the defining punter of my lifetime.
He's the Don Sutton of NFL players.
Yes. Good analogy.
And by the way, speaking of analogies, I mean, the punter and kicker argument is the same as the argument that we have about Edgar Martinez going into the Baseball Hall of Fame that we may have about David Ortiz in a few years, which is, should DHs be in the Hall of Fame? But it's the same thing. I mean, if the position is out there, shouldn't a guy who does that job so well that it doesn't matter that he doesn't do another job be in? And I think a lot of people feel that way about Ray Guy, and I think, you know, Morton Anderson is going to come up at some point, and Vinatieri will come up at some point, and there'll be eventually a couple of kickers and punters.
Wasn't it your book that talked about how wildly underrated Cliff Branch was?
I think that may have been in the article where we talked about Monk's numbers by trying to adjust all the wide receivers from the 70s and 80s to the change in the game. I mean,
right.
wide receivers catch so many more passes now than they used to. It's really ridiculous to try to compare the numbers for guys like Branch and Carmichael and Art Monk to a guy like, you know, Keyshawn Johnson or even Marvin Harrison. Guys just catch so many more passes now. There's fewer runs, so, you know, you really have to look at the eras when you compare those guys.
Well, look at the 1978 Pats. Sam Cunningham, 199 attempts. Andy Johnson, 147. Horace Ivory, 141. Grogan, 81. Don
right.
Calhoun, 76.
Right.
They ran 671 times.
They split the runs more, and then they ran more, period. And meanwhile, you know, your top receivers would catch 50 balls a year, not 80.
Well, that's why Stanley Morgan's not in the Hall of Fame, and if Art Monk's in the Hall of Fame, Stanley Morgan's got to be in there, because when you think, like, he was only catching 40, 45 passes a year, but getting 900 to 1,000 yards receiving every year.
Well, my hobby horse as far as wide receiver goes is Henry Ellard. Henry Ellard is the guy I would like to see in the Hall of Fame. He was really so good for the Rams for so long, and then had a couple of good years with the Redskins. And, you know, he had longevity, and his numbers were top of the league for most of his career. They're just lower than the numbers of wide receivers now.
Well, I'm looking at his stats right now. He started in 83, but he was able to kind of get in on that 90s gravy train.
That's when he was older. I mean,
yeah.
Irving Fryer, same thing. Those guys had really good years when they were older, in part just because there got to be more passing when they were older.
But look at the steamer. You might have to take up the steamer's cause. He, 1977, comes into the league. He is out of the league in 1990. He just missed the gravy train.
I don't know. My general feeling about the Hall of Fame is I don't really feel like arguing in favor of any quote-unquote skill players until there's more linemen and defensive players and linebackers in there. So
that's
a
pretty good point.
It is way overweighed in favor of quarterbacks and running backs, and a little bit in favor of wide receivers, but mostly quarterbacks and running backs.
Someday
I'd rather argue for Demonte Dawson or the guy from the Minnesota with all the sacks, Chip Marshall. or Dealman. We wrote a whole thing actually about franchises that don't have very good representation in the Hall of Fame, and Denver and Minnesota definitely need more people in.
I want somebody to just, like a group of intelligent sports fans, to just create their own Hall of Fame so everything makes
sense.
Some
of the baseball people tried to do that. There's just not, I don't think, enough interest in the Hall of Fame in football for us to do something like that and have it have tons of readership. But there, people from some baseball site tried doing that, and they started with like the 1930, and they had votes every couple of months, you know, making players eligible as they would have been eligible at the time.
That had to have been extremely dorky, those meetings.
Oh, I'm sure it was monumentally dorky.
Let's talk about the round two games. AFC, Tennessee, Baltimore. Baltimore getting three. What do you think?
Yeah, I mean, it's really even. I would take Baltimore getting three, because Baltimore finished a little higher in our numbers. Then again, part of the reason why they finished a little higher in our numbers is that Tennessee, you know, laid down on purpose in the first week, in the last week of the season. And we've never quite figured out a way to correct for that. Because actually, when you go back and look at the last few years, taking out those quote-unquote sit-your-starters games doesn't actually make our numbers any more correct when it comes to predicting the future, which I think is kind of strange. It seems sort of illogical. But, you know, we take the common sense of knowing that Tennessee is a little lower because of that last week. But Baltimore and Philadelphia were our top two teams. I mean, they're all in a pack together. And I think that, you know, in that game, I'd probably take whoever got the points. I think it's pretty even. Baltimore getting three makes sense. If it's in Tennessee, that's the 3-point. They're basically saying the two teams are equal, and that's the home field advantage.
It makes sense unless you don't trust rookie QBs to win consecutive games on the road.
Or any games. I mean, wasn't Flacco the first rookie quarterback in history to win a playoff game on the road?
He was, yeah, and only the third rookie quarterback since the merger to win a playoff game.
But to me, it's about being dragged along by your defense. I mean, frankly, listen, it's nice that Kerry Collins had a couple of weeks there where he was really throwing the ball, but both of those teams, the offense is carried along by the defense. It's really about how well the defense plays.
Right. So what about the other your other favorite football outsider's favorite team, the Philadelphia Eagles, going into Giants Stadium, 4-point underdogs?
Again, I mean, I think that that's two teams that are, I know people think this is weird given their one-loss records, but I think when we saw those two teams play a few weeks ago, they're basically equal. I would make the line Giants by three, not four, but there really are, you know, either team could win. It will probably be close. You know, they hate each other like most good NFC East teams do. And, you know, I would not be shocked either way.
I just wonder if the Eagles are a good road team and whether if Minnesota had even gotten like a C-minus from Tavares if they win that game by 10.
Do you think that yesterday ended the Tavares-Jackson experiment for good?
You know what's not helping him is the bad body language.
He can't be bad and have bad
body language.
He had a couple of good games there at the end of the season, but then you go, okay, well, let's see. The Giants didn't try, really, and, you know, the Lions are the Lions, for crying out loud. I think they really need to get another quarterback. It just ain't happening there.
You know what hurt? You know what hurt me personally, Tavares? When you let the team down after your taint, and you scored the TD on the nice drive to make it 16-14, and you gave me the confidence that you weren't going to kick me in the stomach, and then you did anyway. Tavares, if you're listening,
yeah.
It's going to take a while for us to recover.
He's not listening right now, but perhaps when this is up on the web, he might.
Hey, the rookie, you know, we were just talking about rookie QBs in the playoffs, and I wrote something about it last week about how they were 2-6, and I mentioned the guys. One of the guys, amazingly, was Mr. Todd Marvin Marinovich.
That's unbelievable, isn't it?
Yeah.
Isn't it unbelievable that he started a playoff game? In fact, the graphic they showed during Atlanta, Arizona, that was the largest difference in age in any playoff game between the two quarterbacks, because you'd think they played Denver and they had Steve DeBerg as their starting quarterback.
It's a weird list because it had like Marino and Roethlisberger on it and then Sean King and Todd Marinovich.
Well, Sean King ends up on all these lists.
Yeah.
Sean King ends up on all these lists because he really was the caretaker of the, oh, God, we need a quarterback here. But, I mean, you know, it was the Tampa Bay Bucs defense that really won all those games, so...
And probably almost could have beaten the 99 Rams if they get one call.
Right. I mean, that was a pretty close game.
Listen to this.
Sean King, I mean, it's funny that he's going to be on these lists for the rest of history and not actually have had a career. But
Right. Listen to this Marinovich game, because I didn't realize, I wrote the list in my column, but I didn't realize until a Raider fan emailed me and was like, look at the stats of Marinovich. So it's a wild card game, 1991. He's going against Kansas City. They lose 10-6 at Kansas City. Marinovich, 12 for 23, 140 yards, no TDs, 4 interceptions.
Well, that was back when, it's hard to think of it this way because Kansas City has been so built on offense this decade.
Yeah.
But last decade, they were the opposite. They were completely built on defense.
Ben, so, your rookie QB goes OTDs, 4 interceptions on the road, and you lose by 4? That's a tough game.
It's a lot of good defense. Hey, didn't Chad Pennington throw 4 interceptions?
So, hey, he sure did.
Anybody can do it, right?
Well, didn't your numbers say that Miami was a little bit fortunate during the season?
Yeah, definitely.
In general, with turnovers and
they were
all
the,
that kind
the
of
team.
Stuff.
They were a little fortunate with turnovers, but you know, not really. I mean, they had very few turnovers, mostly because they had very few turnovers.
Yeah.
But in general, you know, based on points scored and allowed, they probably should have been more like 10-6, not 11-5. I don't think anybody expected Pennington to throw 4 picks, but I mean, the last one, Ed Reed is like psychic. He started that play something like 30 yards away from where that ball was, and he literally jumped at the snap to go to where that ball was going. I have no idea how he knew that was going to happen.
Hmm. Let's do.
By the way, the thing about Marinovich as the starting quarterback of the Raiders in 1991 is that there were injuries. Jace Rader was the quarterback of that team, but he got injured in like the second to last game of the season or something.
Yeah, I think Marinovich only had like 7 or 8 career starts. Yeah, he had 8 career starts. He only played for 2 years.
And that was his, you know, that was, he was just there as an injury replacement.
San Diego, Pittsburgh. San Diego going into Pittsburgh getting 6 points.
Well, I mean, I think it's the same thing as last week in some ways. You know, San Diego isn't really an 8-8 team. You take the Hockley call, that would make them 9-7. They've had some bad luck, but then again, they're not as good as Pittsburgh. I think it's right for Pittsburgh to be favored in this game. This Tomlinson injury thing is kind of crazy. If he's really injured, I have no idea why he tried to play. And then there's some people who are saying, you know, if he had just taken painkiller shots, he could have played, but he decided not to take them. And it was good for Sproles to have that big game, but, you know, it's better to have 2 running backs than 1. And I don't know if Sproles is going to have quite the same success against the Pittsburgh defense, which is so swarming and has Polamalu and has 4 linebackers instead of 3, so that there's more guys kind of spread out towards the outside for when he tries to go around. You know, I don't know if he's going to have the same success that he had against Indy.
Our friend Mike Lombardi thought the Pittsburgh front 7 was going to be the key to this game. Do the numbers back that up?
Well, I mean, you know, everything's the key to, I mean, it's hard to talk about certain things being the key to the game, but I mean, that's what that team is built on. Their secondary is nice and all. Polamalu, of course, is special, but he's not special because of the way he plays center field. He's special because of when he's rushing the passer.
Because San Diego had trouble protecting Rivers last week. He played a really good game.
Yeah, their offensive line has surprisingly declined over the last couple of years. Marcus McNeil, so good as a rookie. And he's really declined, and it makes you wonder about guys like Joe Thomas and Ryan Clady, and, you know, to have hot rookie years, and are they going to end up the same way?
So can San Diego's defense keep this close? Maybe this is like a 16-13 type game?
You know, Roethlisberger certainly is easier to sack, and he'll probably make a dumb throw, and, you know, Antonio Cromartie may not have as many interceptions as he had last year, but he can, you know, get the ball if Pittsburgh makes a dumb throw. But then there's also the possibility that they do so much in the first quarter that San Diego just can't catch up, has to do nothing but pass. And you probably will see more Vincent Jackson. I mean, the Colts decided they would try to cover Vincent Jackson as much as possible, and that left a bunch of other stuff open. So maybe the Steelers won't make that same decision, which would mean more passes to Jackson.
You might have to track this, add this to your 2009 list. I love suggesting stuff for your book and just kind of bothering you. QB ratings of QBs after a concussion, like the first 4 weeks. I know there's no way to track that historically, but
well, of course,
if you started
we've got an injury database that goes back now to like 1999, and we're tracking every injury, whether guys were listed as probable, doubtful, whatever. You know, obviously won't say if a guy had a concussion in the middle of a game and then came back in, but anybody who does that, frankly, is an idiot, because people really don't quite understand what a serious injury a concussion is.
Yeah.
the league really needs to step in. The problem is it's kind of a tragedy of the commons thing. There's no reason for any team to take the lead in not putting its best players on the field when they get concussions. The league has to step in and make those decisions, because no team is going to say, okay, we'll be the team that decides to take the stars out when they get concussions.
Well, they're just starting to do research on it, and probably within the next 10 years, don't you think there will be a rule if you get a concussion, you can't play for 2 weeks?
Well, at least
like
1 week.
Yeah.
I mean, I heard on the radio that Adrian Peterson had a little bit of a head injury during the game and then came back in. You shouldn't be able to come back in. There's light concussion. What are you talking about? Your brain banged against your skull. It's not that light.
Well, Welker had a concussion after the Ryan Clark hit and came back a week later.
Yeah, see, I mean, depending on the strength of the concussion, a week later seems bad, but not as bad as in that game.
Yeah.
I mean, I know people love that the week that, whatever, a few years ago, that Brett Favre had a concussion and came back in to the game, but that's just scary.
Carolina giving 10 at home against the Arizona Cardinals.
You did ask me if anything shocked me this weekend, and that is the game that surprised me.
Arizona-Atlanta.
Yes, because of the fact that Arizona had literally declined in everything since midseason. Mm. And I really have a hard time believing in the idea of teams that can turn the switch on and off easily. I mean, I think that it's hard to not try. It's hard to go out there and not try. If you go out there and not try, it looks like what Tennessee looked like in Week 17. It doesn't look like you're a team that's getting blown out of the yard like the Cardinals have looked like the last 3 years with the last 3 weeks. Your starters are in there and you're still losing. When you stop trying, you put in your backups and they get blown out of the yard. So the whole, once they realized they were going to clinch the division, they didn't play as hard, and now we're back to the Cardinals for the first half of the season. I just have a hard time believing that. There were a couple of fluky plays. I mean, that Anquan Boldin touchdown was massively fluky, because of the fact that he ended over there on the same side with Malloy, and Malloy's just not a coverage guy. And then if you watch the replay, it seems like the other Falcons like almost think the play's over and start looking the other way and walking the other way instead of going to try to help tackle.
Mm.
And then some weird like special teams, like that guy who decided he'd tackle the punt returner before the punt got there.
You didn't like that play?
That looked like an XFL highlight.
Yeah.
You half expected him to jump off afterwards and be like, you're going down! it was nice to see them bring out the running game, because the fact is that Atlanta's biggest weakness was their run defense.
I'm going to say I have two counters. First of all, I thought it was like an old school playoff game where the rookie QB didn't play well. The home crowd got into it.
He did make some mistakes.
The home crowd was really into it. I thought they affected the game, and it kind of swung it. If they played that game in Atlanta, Atlanta wins.
You don't hear that a lot about people in Phoenix, do you?
No, they were good.
That home crowd really got into it.
They showed up. You got to hand it to them. They really they did their thing. And I forgot what my second point is.
Oh, okay.
You know why? Because I have two kids and I don't sleep a lot.
Well, I mean, I think next week, Carolina's got a lot of the same strengths and weaknesses as Atlanta does. Obviously, they depend a lot on their running game. They really, the quarterback really only uses one main wide receiver. Carolina actually did not have a good run defense this year, although they had an excellent pass defense. The thing is, their running game is much better than Atlanta's. Atlanta's running game this year was actually kind of mediocre. It's just they did it so much that Turner piled up the yards. Carolina's running game is really good on a yards-per-play basis. D'Angelo Williams, I believe, was the number one rusher in value in our numbers this year. So between that and the home field advantage, and also Carolina's pass rush is better than Arizona's pass rush, I think this is Atlanta's pass rush. I think this is a really hard game for Arizona to win. This is even more of a mismatch than Atlanta was.
And D'Angelo Williams also swung probably 95% of the fantasy leagues down the stretch.
Yeah, we got an email yesterday from somebody thanking us because he took D'Angelo Williams. He took a shot on D'Angelo Williams in like the fifth round of his draft, and I was thinking, we've been higher on D'Angelo Williams than most people for the last couple of years, but it's not like we projected him to do anything like this.
Right.
I mean, we mostly were just saying, why on earth is this team playing Deshaun Foster over this guy?
Yeah.
But nobody thought he would be as good as he was this year. But he was, and I think he'll, have a nice little game here against Arizona.
I remembered my second point from 3 minutes ago.
Hit me.
one thing that your numbers could not factor in the Arizona decline and subsequent resurgence in week 18 was Edge James, who actually looked like semi-competent.
Well, yeah, compared to Tim Hightower, who's really overrated.
Oh, he's terrible. But Edge James was, you know,
but part
I almost
of that
felt
is
like
the
they
Atlanta
didn't
defense.
Use him enough.
Part well, of that is the Atlanta defense. The Atlanta defense has been poor against the run and has been even more poor over the second half of the season than the first half of the season.
You know, this is all fine and dandy, but you didn't say a lot of this stuff last week, Aaron Schatz.
No, well, listen,
I think
I'll
you
tell
picked
you what
Atlanta.
Surprises me. I did pick Atlanta. And it was interesting. Wisenhahn, I think, did a good job of going against his own tendencies by coming out with the run. And rather than I find that most coaches are kind of obstinate. They believe that what they do works, and they always go with that game plan. And Wisenhahn did a good job for a while there in the first half of saying, no, we're not going to play the kind of game we normally play. We're going to play the kind of game that attacks the weaknesses of our opponent. And so they came out with the run a lot. I don't think I would run a reverse when you're trying to ice the game in the last 3 minutes, but they came out with the run a lot, and that's pretty impressive. And I was surprised. I did think Atlanta was the better team, and I did think that they would win. I mean, I also said Atlanta had a poor run defense. That's no secret, but I just thought that given the decline of the Cardinals over the last couple of months that, you know, Matt Ryan would have a big game and Roddy White, and that didn't happen.
Well, don't worry. They'll decline this week. You know, you were talking about the Arizona running game and Tim Hightower and Edge James. And with Edge James, how does somebody – they look like they're dead middle of the season. And then they regroup. Like, is there any way to statistically plan for that? Or
no, but I think part of it is, I mean, opponent strength. Opponent strength is really underestimated by people when they look at how players perform in individual games. You know, I'll give you an example. Back in 2004, was it 04 or 05? I can't remember which was the year that they both started for the first time. Carson Palmer and Byron Leftwich had very similar numbers. But Carson Palmer played a very hard schedule, and Byron Leftwich played a very easy schedule. So in reality, they weren't equivalent. And I think we learned that over time. So what happened with Arizona, you know, part of what happened with Edge is that that defense is just not very good against the run. He was an average runner this year when he was in the game, which is better than Hightower, but, you know, not the Edge that everybody remembers from years and years ago.
But Carolina's run D is good.
No, it's poor.
Really?
It's not as poor as Atlanta's, but it's poor. Yeah, they're 23rd in our ratings, I think, or 24th. Their pass defense is like 6th. But the right strategy against Carolina is the same as the strategy against Atlanta, which is go against your tendencies and run more often.
And Philly, I think, was another team. Aikman did a good job of pointing this out. During the season, they would have abandoned the run because it wasn't working, just throwing every down, and then teams could have just started blitzing. They really kind of stuck with Westbrook and at least kept Minnesota honest, and that was one of the things that set up the screen pass.
Right. I don't believe in running just for the heck of running if you're only getting a yard per carry. But you do need to do it a little bit so that the other defense can't just go to dime all the time.
Right.
You have to have some kind of balance.
Pick an underdog for me.
This week's games, based on the points, I mean, I picked both Philly and Baltimore to cover. I think the chances of them winning the games are enough that those are really reasonable picks. And then
Which one do you like more?
Between Philly and Baltimore?
Yeah.
Ooh, it's tough. I would say Philly because Philly is more inconsistent, and therefore there's a good chance that Baltimore will have a good game like they usually do and just get outplayed by Tennessee.
Yeah.
Whereas Philly will probably either play really well or lay an egg and do really stupid things, but in a way that almost makes it more likely that they would win.
So are you going to Tampa for the Super Bowl?
I planned to try to do it, and then I never made any plans.
Is it because the Super Bowl's in Tampa?
No. Actually, there's family friends down there I think I could have stayed with, but I get kind of lazy about making plans to go places.
Because that was my reason for not going this year.
Oh, that it's in Tampa?
Yeah. I went to Tampa last year, and I feel like if I can keep it to once every 12 years, I'm good.
Well, as long, you know, if they don't have it in Jacksonville again, nobody will hate you.
We will never see that again in our lifetime. And, in fact, I will argue this to the death. Foxborough would have been a better Super Bowl site than Jacksonville. It was just as cold as Foxborough would have been. It was just as out of the way. There was just as much traveling, but at least we could have been in Boston.
And no, everybody would have been in Providence. Don't they have everybody stay in
Providence? Well, Providence, whatever. I mean, they in Jacksonville, people were staying an hour from the stadium, and all the highways were you know, closed off going into the city. That was the worst. They'll never top that. They could have that in any place in America, and it would not be worse than Jacksonville.
Well, we'll see, because they are going to have it in any place in America. It just seems like the thing's bouncing around wherever anybody builds a new stadium. So.
Well, I'd like to see them build one mega stadium in either Vegas or L.A. And this is actually Casey Wasserman's idea. So they build a giant stadium, huge complex in L.A. All the teams chip in, and every other year the L.A. stadium gets the Super Bowl, and eventually they would all get paid back from the Super Bowl profits. It's kind of interesting. And then maybe down the road they get a team too.
Yeah, don't expect to see it in Vegas.
You don't think so?
For a company that makes a lot of gets a lot of the interest in it because of the existence of lines, the NFL sure does like to pretend that there are no lines.
Yeah, except that except when they fine teams for not revealing injuries.
Right. Oh, yes, right. And, yeah. And of course, what's the reason for that? Oh, well, we all have to be honest with the press.
Yeah, we have to be honest with the reporters because they care about this stuff. Ridiculous. Yeah. All right, we'll see you in round three.
We'll see you in round three.
Take care.
Yeah.
So I get to sign off. Whoa.
Thank you for downloading the BS Report with Bill Simmons.
Too much fun.
Check out more podcasts at the iTunes Music Store or at Podcenter at ESPNRadio.com.
Peace out.